Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber. Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Today we are joined by a sweet new friend of ours, Colleen Riddle, and she is the Director of Foster Care Ministries for the Florida Baptist Homes for Children. Colleen and her husband, Shane, are the parents of three children.
So welcome, Colleen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much. You know, Lynette and Colleen, Psalm 37:5 says, "Commit your way to the Lord, trust in Him, and He will act." And oftentimes when we're following hard after the Lord, He tends to bring things into our lives that are unexpected, things that we weren't necessarily thinking would be our path. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that encapsulates Shane and Colleen's story. Absolutely. Of how the Lord grew their family. Mm-hmm. So Colleen, we'd really like to jump in and just hear about how you got involved in the foster care system and how the Lord grew your family.
Yes, ma'am. So I grew up with parents who just modeled serving their community. My parents housed different athletes that my father had coached or different youth in the community. My mother had fed community children. We drove children to church. And it was very similar for my husband as well. They first started attending the church that I was at when they were in high school, and they had another high school student living with them. I'm pretty sure his mother has fed half the state of Florida. So it was just a very giving environment for both of us. Both of our parents were very hospitable. So I had wanted to be in some sort of serving career, working with underprivileged youth or children, and ended up in the field of criminal justice. I started working for Department of Juvenile Justice. I was very young. I had just turned 21 when I took my first full-time position.
Wow.
And I quickly learned, I think I'm doing this great work. I'm running transition therapy groups. I'm helping youth prepare to transition back into their homes and their communities, helping them with job skills, interview skills, connecting them with Job Corps, all of these different things that I thought were great and the answers. About a year into working there, some of the girls came back. And that really surprised me because I thought, oh, these girls are going to be successful. They have the skills. They know what they need to know. And so I dug a little deeper and I quickly learned that we were sending them out on their own. They had no support system.
Right.
Most of the crimes that they committed were in conjunction with their parents or their older siblings. Mm. And so I really took that opportunity to change career paths and work. I wanted to work with the entire family. I felt just intervene at the level of a child and expect a child to teach their parents a new way of life, so to speak. And so, 2 years into my career, so to speak, with Department of Juvenile Justice, I transitioned over and started working for the child welfare system. And I started as a case manager, became a supervisor, and then I had worked in adoptions for a while, and I was a training manager, and then ultimately a program manager for a case management organization. A lot about the child welfare system. The strengths that Florida had as a privatized system, but also a lot of the weaknesses just with financial barriers and turnover. And it's a very intense field emotionally as mm-hmm. well. And I had interesting experiences as a case manager and as a program manager to the adoption of one of my children. My husband and I had been married about 4 or 5 years, and a couple in our church had approached us about a young man who was in need of housing and some services. We had no children at that time, and we had plenty of space in our home, and so we had agreed to meet. Initially, we were thinking that she had requested just that everybody knew I worked for the child welfare system. They probably just wanted some referrals, some names, phone numbers, places to go. But when we met for dinner, it was very clear that she felt this young man should move in with us and become a part of our family. He was had aged out of the foster care system, was supposed to be living with some former foster parents. They were moving. Basically, he was going to be homeless. And so we quickly discussed that this, we had just met him and decided, you know what, we have the space. This would be the time to say yes. It's time to practice what we preach, so to speak. And we have a home. We need to open it.
So, Colleen, at that time, how old were you and your husband?
About 26, I want to say. 25,
wow.
26.
So, you're 26 and he's 18?
Yes.
Okay. So, he moved into your home.
Yes. The timing was hilarious, like everything in our life always is. The day after we met him, we were leaving on a 2-week vacation. We quickly made arrangements for him to stay. He actually stayed with the couple who introduced him to us until we got back from vacation. But the day we got back from vacation, we met him at church, gave him the key to our house, gave him some private time so that he could move in and just take in his new surroundings. And Corey became our first child. He's the same age as my youngest sister. So very interesting family dynamic we created right there. But Corey is a wonderful young man. He's a hard worker, very, very respectful. Just as far as, you know, a first experience goes, He was fantastic. He taught us a lot. He still teaches us a lot all of the time. He still lives at home with us. I think having finally found a family committed to him for the long haul, he's not ready to move out and give that up yet. And we are more than happy to have him live with us as long as he needs. But Corey taught us a lot of lessons.
So Colleen, as 26-year-old parents to an 18-year-old young man, what kind of boundaries did you all put in place? I mean, how do you all of a sudden become the guardians or the coaches to an 18-year-old young man when you're 26 and have never parented to that age? It's almost like you were bringing in a little brother.
Yes. We affectionately call him our man child just because of his age and our age. And so it was very interesting. We set some non-negotiables, household rules that we made very clear from the beginning. And just really were very flexible from there. Most of our parenting came after we built strong relationships. You know, he didn't know us. We didn't know him. We were strangers in a long line of strangers that he had lived with. Mm-hmm. So it took a while for him to realize, you know, we cared about him. We cared about his future. We had to do a lot of work to prove ourselves to him, that we were committed to him and we were vested in his character growth, his long-term outcome. And I think those trials came through car insurance and getting a vehicle and helping him get to work.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Get visits with his daughter and all kinds of things where we just had to prove that we were committed.
That's right. And it takes your time. And you can't just leave them on their own, you know, leave them on their own to figure all that out.
Exactly. And that's where the environment that he was coming from. And so once we had through time and financial commitment that he was a part of the family and seeking guidance and asking for help, and we were able to do more coaching and financial planning and some resume building and skills as well that a young adult absolutely needs. But it didn't come immediately.
Right.
And building those social skills and the trust was very important in the beginning.
And how long do you think that takes, Colleen, with an older child or young adult?
I think you don't really start seeing significant improvement until after a year.
I agree. Totally agree. Yes.
So many placements or moves have been less than a year. So when you can hit that 1 year mark, it demonstrates that you're committed more so than anybody else has previously been.
That's right.
So Colleen, how did your parents react?
My parents were not surprised at all, I don't think. I think they may have been surprised at that we started with an adult. knowing my family and just the friendships that I have had as a child and how much I resemble my mother, just kind of a champion for the underdog and really
right.
wanting the person who started out with less to win and succeed and have more. It didn't surprise them at all. And I don't think Shane's parents were very surprised either. He did marry me, and so that comes with a little bit of it. But like I had mentioned, his mother didn't know a stranger, and she was willing to take in anybody and everybody. So he's definitely her daughter as well.
Well, you're definitely fulfilling what the gospel says and what scripture says, even in Romans when it says, you know, when people are in need, be ready to help them, always be eager to practice hospitality.
Right.
And this is the highest form of hospitality to be able to add to your family, especially in this very unique situation.
And I love the way Colleen and Shane did it with boundaries.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. with a young adult or a teenage son, you have to have those boundaries, but I think that's a protection around mm-hmm. them. You know, someone cares enough about me to keep me in boundaries. Mm-hmm. They may not always, you know, verbalize that, but I see with my own children, someone cares enough about me to keep me safe.
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
So, Colleen, after Corey joined your family, then we see that you have two other children. So how did the rest of your family grow after that?
Well, when Corey moved in, he started teaching me a lot about how broken our system was, even to a greater extent than I knew from my adult perspective and my professional perspective. But as a young man who had lived through various foster homes where he had not been treated well, or treated how I thought he should have been treated, and group homes, which is just, you know, dorm style living with 8-hour supervision, different person coming in. I really was struggling seeing a lot of the things that I was in my current position. Around that time as well, I was approached to do a favor. There was a young lady, her case had become quite politically charged, and there was a need to move her case to a new agency. She was available for adoption. She'd been available for many, many years, and I was the only person still trained in adoption competencies, but not working for the agency who typically handled all adoptions. And so I was asked, even as a program manager, if I would take her case, and not normally holding a caseload, but I agreed. So she was my only case. And it was also unusual. I was able to spend an extensive amount of time with this young lady, really poured into her, did some unusual things. She was moved around to multiple placements through no fault of her own. And so there were times when I would get up at 4 a.m. to go pick her up from one placement to get her back to her original school, so she wasn't moving schools. So just a lot of unusual opportunities to get to know her very, very well. So this is happening. I'm building a relationship with her, but I'm also kind of looking for my next step career-wise to see how I can impact our system in a new way to provide homes for children that really meet the quality and expectations that I would want for children to live in, hearing Corey's life stories. And so Florida Baptist Children's Homes was revamping their community family licensing program, and the opportunity came for me to become the Central Florida Director with Florida Baptist. And that was definitely God leading me clearly in that direction. I could share my passion for quality Christian foster homes who understood what unconditional love was and was going to be meeting the spiritual needs of a child, not just giving them 3 hots and a cot, so to speak. But I was also very torn because I had developed such a close relationship with this young lady in this unusual circumstance. And as I was transitioning into my new position, the judge assigned to her case asked if I would be her court-appointed mentor. And I thought, yes, fantastic. I'm going to still be able to be involved in her life. The research shows you only need one vested, committed adult for a youth to be successful. So that's me. I'm signed up. I'm committed. I'll be her mentor. And so over the next year, I started picking her up every Wednesday. We would do dinner. We would go to youth groups. I was taking her to youth group at my church. She was actually finally placed in a home that was fairly close and a more quality foster home that she needed at that time. And so it was going very well. We continued to get closer over that year. She actually called me her church mom because she didn't want to go to church and not have a mother like all the other kids. So she called me her church mom. And of course, I was more than happy to be that to her.
And how old is she at the time?
She was 13.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So she had just turned 13 right when I transitioned. And about after around a year of doing that, they started the matching process to match her with another adoptive family. At this time, I'm almost 30 weeks pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm trying to be involved in this matching process. I have some concerns about the person that they're matching her with. The person was a wonderful person. Their heart was great. Just knowing this young lady and what she's been through, I just had some concerns about the longevity of that option. But she would still remain close. I would still be able to be involved in her life. They were on board with maintaining that connection. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm just a little too emotional because I'm pregnant. Maybe I've become too attached. It's not necessarily this mentor relationship. But towards the end of the process, it fell through. And my husband said to me, he said, "You need to ask if you can adopt her. We need her in our home." And I thought, wow, if my husband's on board,
right.
Then, you know, the worst that can happen is they say no, right?
Exactly.
So very unusual that somebody who managed the case and then was a mentor would be approved to adopt. But I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's put our name in. So we did. Her guardian ad litem was actually the only other person who'd been assigned to her case since the very beginning. And her guardian was on board. She was thrilled. She she screamed when we first let her know we were interested. So she was a huge advocate in making this happen. As we went through the process, we really thought, you know what, in reviewing her life, her 13 years at that point, third grade was the only time that she had ever been to one school from the beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. So we said, if this is going to happen, she needs to move in before school starts. We also felt like she needed to move in before I had our baby, simply because we felt like she should get established in her home before adding another new new person to the mix. So we were approved, we were going through the process, and then it came back, oh, by the way, you guys need a different house because there needs to be one designated bedroom per child. Due to some of her trauma history, there could be no room sharing. And we were originally thinking, oh, the baby would just stay in our room for a little while, we have some time. Now we have an extremely condensed timeline. I'm about 34 weeks pregnant when we found that out. So we said, okay, if this is meant to be, then God will open the doors. And he absolutely did. We found a for sale by owner. The seller was, very gracious. She, heard our story and wanted to close quickly. So we were able to do that. So we bought a house on a Monday. Our community group came, moved us that evening. They really took care of everything. The ladies came Tuesday and Wednesday to help me unpack and get the home set up Wednesday. And then Brittany moved in Friday, turned 14 on Saturday. And 3 weeks later, which was also Brittany's first day of school, I had our baby, Owen. And then it's been 1 year since then. So the last year has just been a whirlwind of helping Brittany settle into the new home, her new school, the school that she will graduate from.
That's
she completed
awesome.
Ninth grade. So she just started 10th grade again. She's starting her second year there, adjusting to a newborn, as well as she's now 15. And we still have Corey, who's now 25 as well. So
wow.
That is our whirlwind of how we went from 0 to 1 to 3.
Wow. So Colleen, because of your role, you're the director of foster care ministries at Florida Baptist Homes for Children. You help recruit families. And I know that one of the things that families are concerned about is the timing, you know, whether it be good timing, yes, or bad timing for their family. So what's an encouragement that you give to families when they're seeking to consider foster care?
Well, first I tell them there's no good time. It's never convenient. It's, you know, taking classes or going through a home study. There's no good time. And then I will obviously share a little bit of my story. Be like, if I can move in a teenager and then 3 weeks mm-hmm. later have a baby. Oh, what I failed to mention is we were also in the NICU for about a week and a half after I had Owen. So that just complicated everything a little bit more. But clearly, there's no convenient time if we're looking at our schedules. But it's really not about our convenience. And if God has called you to do this work, then He will provide a way. He'll provide the support, the babysitter for your other children that you need cared for, finances to do whatever changes you need to do for your home, people in your church who will encourage you. There's a way if God has called you to this ministry, and it's not about trying to find the right time. It's about just doing it and letting God take care of the details.
You know, and I can see how the Lord would use Owen being mm-hmm. in the NICU because he has, you know, an older sister and an older brother who want him to come home, who are advocating for him. I can see how the Lord used that time. I've sat in the NICU myself with a grandbaby, and you just, God just bonds your heart as a family during that time because you rally together.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. And it was really awesome. I think Owen has done wonders for our family
yes.
in that.
Mm-hmm.
He only knows life with Brittany and Corey.
Right.
He has no idea that they were not birthed the same way mm-hmm. that he was, that they weren't always a part of the family. He adores them. He gets so excited when they come home. He wants them to play with him. So that he's just really been a blessing in that sense as well, as kind of bonding everybody, even with all the different backgrounds and life stories.
Well, Colleen, you have definitely had an unorthodox way of building your family. And we are fascinated by your story. I know there had to be some trauma techniques you used, some therapy techniques to help your children maybe move past some bad memories or some really difficult times. Adoptive foster moms, we all kind of walk that path, but it's encouraging to hear one another's stories. We are out of time today, but we are asking, would you come back and join us tomorrow so we can pick up and talk about maybe some specifics you've done with your children that you've really seen some healing take place with them?
Absolutely. Yes, I would love that.
That'd be great.
Thanks for being with us today, Colleen.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit namb.net/sendrelief.